Got your prayer book handy? Probably gonna need it. Matt Mittler here with Kaufman's Holiday, Part 3, A Beacon of Light. Not much light so far, is there? And believe me, it's gonna get darker. This is, after all, Sunday Night Noir. Welcome to Episode 12. Ready? Here comes Chapter 69. They picked a spot near the pond, and the colonel said Kaddish. It had taken the Rebbe 6 days to die. He'd been right. There was no antidote. As far as poison goes, he'd administered the perfect dose. They'd laid him in a pit, dressed in his suit. The colonel had it cleaned, Kaufman's too, and wrapped in a white bedsheet. The Rebbe didn't want a plain coffin. Didn't want any coffin. Why interfere with nature? He'd asked. It was the last words he would speak. On the way back to the house, the colonel broke the silence.
Ain't no point sitting Shiva. We've been sitting with the old man long enough.
Kaufman mulled it over.
Why not go for broke? One more day, make it a week.
The colonel groaned.
Just supposed you'd want to get on with your mission.
Kaufman tried to consider exactly how he'd continue his mission, but it wasn't worth the effort.
It can wait another day, he said.
The house seemed darker now. Even dying, the Rebbe was radiant. Kaufman and the colonel had taken turns caring for him, which wasn't hard. The Rebbe wouldn't eat and barely spoke. So they'd sit beside him, reading occasionally, but mostly just being quiet. Watching. Waiting. The colonel went into town for supplies while Kaufman tidied up. Kaufman had slipped him 100, and the colonel came back with a year's worth of food and a new tie for Kaufman. Silk. From B. Altman's. Impressive, but he didn't put it on right then. He rolled up his shirt sleeves and began to cut vegetables. They made spaghetti with red meat sauce. Nothing out of a can. That evening they talked about the Rebbe, and then they talked about suicide. Not in any morbid way, practical, the way the Rebbe would have liked it. This led to the subject of drinking. Why? Why not? And it was sort of funny, because talking about drinking actually helped them steer clear of drinking, for the time being at least, and they kept at it long into the night. Then they packed into the colonel's jeep and drove north to Silver Lake, parked up on a ridge, and watched the sunrise. Kaufman propped his feet up on the dash, hooked his hands behind his head.
Questions. I had so many questions. There ain't always gonna be answers, Yeshiva.
The colonel pressed in the car lighter, unwrapped a fresh El Producto. Kaufman turned his attention to the ascending sun.
Just think, Auschwitz to Dora Mittelbau, to Columbia University, to...
He sighed and shook his head.
I never found out what he was doing there. Columbia? That was in the file, classified. Guarantee he wasn't on no football scholarship.
The lighter popped out and the colonel lit up.
Had to be something military, or government at least. He fingered me as some sort of agent at first, come to get him. How dangerous could it be? Dangerous? There's a war going on, Kimosabe. But dangerous enough to kill yourself? He asked.
The colonel shrugged. Kaufman gave him a nudge.
Think you can find out?
The colonel blew a thin stream of smoke out over the windshield. Thank you. but the rest of the day was a wash. They ended up sleeping through most of it. The following morning, the colonel stepped into the kitchen, clean-shaven, and decked out in his officer's uniform. The transformation was startling. He seemed taller, sterner. He passed on breakfast and headed straight for the city. Didn't want company. Left Kaufman on his own. Kaufman wandered the woods for a while, then sat by the Rebbe's grave and looked out at the pond. Somehow, it didn't seem appropriate to go for a swim. The colonel was gone late into the afternoon. When he returned, he was in a decidedly sour mood.
"Had to stand in line for 2 hours for a paper. There's a strike going on."
He tossed the Tribune on the table. Kaufman tried to meet the colonel's eyes, but he kept looking away.
"What did you find at Columbia? More than you'll get out of that rag."
The colonel removed his cap and rubbed his bristly top.
"But did you get anything on the Rebbe?"
He dropped onto the couch, yanked off his tie.
"It's summer. You'd think a university would be winding down a little." "Probably."
Kaufman still couldn't get a bead.
"Unless they're doing more than just pushing diplomas."
He wrapped the tie around his knuckles absentmindedly.
"Boy, I'd love a drink,"
he said and hung his head back.
"Bad, huh?"
Kaufman sat down next to him.
"Couldn't get in close. Didn't need to. Just needed some old coot. Sorry to hear about the Rebbe. German guy. Got out before the war. Geochemist. They got every kind of brain you'd need in there." "In where?" "Manhattan Project, it's called. But it ain't just in Manhattan. There's a bunch of eggheads in Chicago, too. And the main site's New Mexico. I'd heard talk about us building some bomb bigger than the Ritz, but who'd have thunk they actually had something? Uses plutonium, which ain't from Pluto, if you're wondering. It's from under the ground. Radioactive. You can't even touch the stuff. But it's all on the hush. Army sure ain't privy to this."
The colonel sucked in a slow breath.
"Might be tough to stomach going from the factory at Dora to the factory at Columbia. Fella I spoke with said the Rebbe couldn't even bring himself to fake his way through this one. Said the whole team of 'em was having nightmares." "New Mexico. The future is in science." "What's that?" "Something I overheard."
Kaufman balanced his chin on his hand.
"What's the chances Clayton Walsh is toying around with weapons?" "He's got money, right? Enough to float 5.5 million, if that's his game. Somebody's got to foot the bill. If the public don't know about it, hell, if regular military don't even know, well, scratch has got to come from somewhere. Private investors?"
Kaufman smoothed back his hair.
"But there's nothing wrong with that. So he wants to win the war. He's a patriot." "Win the war?"
The colonel gave a grunt.
"He's just getting on the inside." "What, it's all politics then?" "Ain't no politics, Bubby. It's economics."
He hunted for a fresh cigar.
"You know who wins the war? Every war? The manufacturer, the contractor, the profiteer. Once you figure that out, you see how hopeless it really is."
The colonel looked at his watch. The morning sun was already fingering through the trees, lighting up tiny particles of dust that swarmed through the house.
"Welp, the train's in 15,
he announced.
"I'm ready."
Kaufman tightened his new tie, gold filigree flashing over a crimson backdrop.
"Wait a minute."
The colonel turned about face and marched into the bedroom. Kaufman sat back down on a battered couch. He rubbed his fingertips over a lone patch of velvet on the otherwise barren surface.
"Take this,"
the colonel ordered, returning with a cigar box.
Another bar mitzvah present?
Kaufman stood up.
Don't spoil me. Take it.
And he pressed the box into Kaufman's gut. There was no humor in the colonel's face. Kaufman opened the box. Inside was a gun.
It's a Luger, German. It's contraband, but it shoots. There's some ammo in there, too. Could come in handy. If not, you can probably sell it for a couple of bucks. I'd give you my automatic, but in case something happens, I can't have it traced back to me. Hopefully you won't have to use it.
Kaufman stared into the box, pinched an inside chunk of cheek between his molars.
Hopefully.
He slipped his fingers snugly around the grip, unloaded the clip, checked the cartridge, and snapped it back.
Hopefully I'll have a choice.
Chapter 70. Goldstein and his pepsodent grin bounded down the docks.
Did you miss me? He asked.
Dreamt of you every night, Goldie.
They smacked each other's shoulders, clasped hands, hugged briefly, then stiffened. Kaufman's word machine was in need of oil. For Goldstein, it was probably something else. He looked down.
You've been gone a long time, Mo.
Kaufman craned his neck.
Yeah, sorry. Tried to call, but you checked out of the Y.
I was crazy worrying about you.
Kaufman raised an eyebrow, leaned in, and gave Goldstein a light knuckle to the chin.
Didn't know we were married.
We ain't.
Goldstein slapped his hands against his belly.
But I am carrying your child.
Kaufman smiled, nodded toward a shack beside the wharf.
There's a place makes a mean Portuguese western. You hungry?
Hey.
Goldstein held out his hands.
I'm eating for two, you know. You've been excavating long enough. Hope you dug up some jewels.
Goldstein dumped a glop of ketchup on his omelet.
Dug up a Jew? A prisoner. At Dora Middlebau.
Goldstein set down his fork.
And?
Kaufman took a sip of tea.
And then I buried him.
Jeez, Mo. No wonder you're askew. Another murder?
Nah, nothing like that. He offed himself. But I got his story. I also got Patrick's war record, unabridged.
Goldstein tapped his toes on the yellowed linoleum.
So, you gonna illuminate me?
Best you stay in the dark, Goldie. This information's contaminated.
Kaufman pushed a French fry around his platter.
One hell of a ride, and it ain't over yet.
He picked up the fry and popped it in his mouth.
That's why Moses gets 5 whole books. You can't clue me in?
I'll fill in the blanks, just not right now. Wouldn't mind hearing your latest chapter, though.
You really ain't missed much. A few more rounds of golf at Horizon House.
High stakes?
Seemed that way to me. Got a regular all-star tournament planned for the 4th. Fireworks and all. You're back just in time.
What about the Glen kid?
Been mostly on the sidelines, but he's still there.
And the girl?
Raising a stink for the coloreds. She's in sometimes 6 days a week. I gotta admit, starting to feel good. But me, I don't do Saturdays. It's a religious thing.
Kaufman leaned back.
What about her and Glenn?
They goes out, but nothing happens. It's almost embarrassing to watch. He your target?
No target yet, but doesn't mean I can't take aim.
He took the cigar box off his lap, placed it on the table. Goldstein didn't ask. Kaufman stared out into space, or, in this case, into the glare off the stainless steel backsplash of the short order station, a trio of copper-skinned Portuguese juggling spatulas, chopping potatoes, flipping pancakes and eggs, shouting orders at each other. Gotta love these joints. Breakfast, morning, noon, and night, served in the blink of an eye.
I've been thinking, though.
Now we're really in trouble.
Seriously, what if Walsh fell? Just fell. Wouldn't take much to tip over a tippler. An unexpected belch? A tiny hiccup? Kerplop.
In which case, why am I hunting?
Well, I wasn't gonna press.
Believe me, Goldie, I've considered it. And suicide. Though I doubt Private Patty had even half a conscience. Just that the topic's been on my mind lately.
Kaufman wagged his head.
Besides, there's that gardener's report. Your man, Slim Logan. He saw somebody on the balcony.
He looked back over at the cooks, zigzagging behind the counter. One caught his eye for a split second and returned to the griddle. For some reason, it made Kaufman feel clammy.
Let's get some air, he said,
and wedged the box into the crook of his arm. Walked along the wharf. A group of kids were tossing breadcrumbs to seagulls, giggling as the birds swooped down about them.
You got a sister, right, Goldie?
Kaufman asked.
Pearl, you met her. She's a doll. Touch her and you're a dead man.
She's younger than you.
6 years. Ain't that about the difference between you and Eli?
Eli's 4 years younger.
Kaufman watched the children play.
Would be kind of strange to have siblings that were, let's say, 10, 12 years apart, wouldn't it?
Not if you had 10 or 12 siblings,
Goldstein answered with a wink.
No, a break. One kid, and then a decade or so later, more kids.
You lost me, Mo.
Kaufman widened his horizon. Newport Harbor, Fort Adams, Storer Park. He'd walked this same path with Allegra only a month ago. He zeroed in on Goat Island Lighthouse. Regrets. So many regrets. Well, that's sure to pull you down. He returned to the birds, now circling overhead, squealing, screeching.
Charlene at the library?
Goldstein was busy picking his teeth.
You can't have her or my sister.
Kaufman looked over at him. Goldstein didn't quite fill the void, but he helped.
You're a good friend, Goldie. I'm lucky to know you.
Oi!
He tossed his toothpick.
Now you're gonna butchicky me? Save it for my funeral.
You're right, Kaufman snorted. Back to business. I'm gonna check out a hunch and announce my return to little Miss Mara. At least give her my money's worth.
And what about my money's worth?
What do I owe you? A week?
Try 3.
Kaufman reached inside his jacket and pulled out a roll of bills.
There's a little extra in there. Mara's a big tipper.
He counted the bills.
You sure you want this job to end?
Frankly, I'm not sure of anything. But let me get on with it. You can skedaddle back to the office.
What, you think I gotta punch the clock? You're paying my tab. Give me a real job.
Okay, kitten, check in at Rogers High. I need yearbooks for Bradley Glenn's mom. All 4 years if she graduated. I'm sure she grew up a townie. Then get back to work. I'll meet you there before Mara closes shop.
And where are you off to, honey bun?
Kaufman fitted his hat and tilted it against the midday sun.
Catch up on my reading, but I promise not to make a play for the librarian.
Mr. Koffler!
Another regret to add to the list. Please call me Mo. Good to see you, Charlene. Back in town. Just grabbed a bite with Goldie. Charlene positioned herself on the corner of the desk, a pound of thigh prominently displayed.
You sneaking around my honey bun's back, Mr. Koffler?
Not my style, Toots. Just need some research. Daily news, weddings and births. Everything you got starting from 1922.
You should try having some fun, Mr. Koffler. Your gal Allegra, she sure knows how to swing.
She oozed off the desk and led a conga line to the archives room.
Put you down for 100, then. Thank you so very much.
The office was twice as busy with twice the staff compared to his last visit. There was now a whole bank of phones by the wall, all in use. Bright young things, undaunted. Mara handed a stack of leaflets to an energetic assistant. She started to rush up to Kaufman, then slowed to a more dignified pace. No one was paying particular attention except for one typist off in the corner, a white guy, a little older than most of the other volunteers, had a pen wedged behind his ear, which he carefully removed, and began to tap on the desk in front of him, pointing to a maroon high school yearbook. But Mara was in Kaufman's face before he could do anything about it.
"Welcome back, Percival. Where's the Grail?"
"Miss Mara? Got another soldier here, been stiffed his Medal of Honor."
A gawky teen in a skinny white tie waved a phone in the air.
"Just take a message, Wendell."
She brushed a sleeve across her forehead.
"We've had a lot of action since the freedom rallies."
She was wearing a man's white dress shirt and carefully began to roll up the cuffs.
"You wouldn't believe the numbers coming on board. Might even get Paul Robeson for a concert." "Well?"
She shot Kaufman an exasperated look.
"You want me to talk in here?"
Mara glanced around.
"Come."
She grabbed him by the hand. He spotted Goldstein aiming his finger like a gun at the book. Kaufman pointed to his watch and held up a hand, five fingers spread. They stepped outside. Kaufman shifted focus to Mara.
"I found out what happened at Dora Middlebow."
Her hands fluttered about. Finally came to light on her pearl necklace.
"It's not pretty," he warned.
"I didn't expect it to be,"
she said, counting the beads like a rosary.
"But I gotta know something."
Kaufman squinted.
"Is this what you hired me for? To dredge up this dirt? 'Cause you could have asked me that in the first place."
"And what if I had?"
"I would have told you to get lost."
She steeled herself.
"Patrick was no hero."
"But was he a murder victim?"
Kaufman straightened his spine.
"What is this case to you? You really want Patrick's killer? Or do you just want to take down old man Walsh?"
"I want justice."
"Can't argue with that."
He wanted to call her on linking the Patriots to his parents' death, but decided to hold off.
"You were in New York a week," she said. "What did you find? Did you find the prisoner?"
A week ago, he was certain she'd set him up. Even that she'd tried to kill the Rebbe. She didn't kill him, but Kaufman still wasn't unconvinced about the setup. He looked over her shoulder and noticed Goldstein in the window, waving the yearbook over his head. Mara caught Kaufman's eye and slowly turned around. Goldstein ducked behind a curtain, a tad slow on the reflexes.
"What the hell is going on?"
"What do you mean?"
Kaufman asked. She looked over at Goldstein, who was slinking back to his desk, glared at Kaufman, and stormed inside. A moment later, she came out with Goldstein in tow.
"What is this about, Lipschitz?"
She shook him by the lapel.
"You know each other?"
Kaufman subtly shook his head, a little too subtly.
"Yeah. We met once before, month ago. You're that Jewish fellow, right? How you doing?"
Goldstein reached out to shake his hand. Mara slapped it away and turned her ire towards Kaufman.
Guess it's pretty hard to weasel your way out when you're partnering with a weasel.
Kaufman sucked in his bottom lip.
Thanks, Goldie. You've sufficiently rendered the plan inert. Mara Walsh, meet Emmanuel Goldstein.
You're not even Myron Lipschitz? I don't believe it.
She threw her arms in the air.
I don't believe you had this creep spying on me.
Goldstein piped up.
Hey, I've been working too, girlie. I got that whole delegation set up in Providence.
I needed an inside eye, Mara. Just doing my job.
Kaufman put a hand on her shoulder, but she shook it off.
I'm not the one I hired you to snoop on.
No, but you're still a suspect.
Isn't that sweet? And here I am paying your rent.
Well, you're not top of my list, if that's any consolation.
Kaufman cocked his head.
That would have to be your steady, Bradley Glenn.
She turned red and gave him a swift smack across the cheek.
Guess I deserve that. Fact is, I'm still fishing around, but the pond is getting smaller.
Goldstein tried for an assist.
We know he ain't your steady anyways.
She spun around and stomped on his foot.
For Christ's sakes!
He yelped. Then swung back to Kaufman.
It's not Bradley. I know it's not. The prisoner. Did you find him?
Why was she so insistent? Was that just her nature? Was it the same with her brother's murder as it was with Negro rights? Just a cause?
I found him.
And?
Am I still on the case?
Mara tried to hide it, but Kaufman could tell she was impressed.
I don't have any money on me now.
That's okay. I have plenty. Expenses have been low. I'll meet you tonight at Casa Horizon. First, I have to talk to Glenn, whether or not you think he's clean.
He is,
she said.
Please don't go after him.
I'm not going after him. I'm not going after anybody. Yet. Meanwhile, I need to convene with the weasel.
She sneered at Goldstein.
And you're fired. Fired? I'm a volunteer.
She went back into the storefront. Kaufman sighed.
Well, you put a royal kibosh on that one, my friend.
Wasn't nothing more to check out anyways, Mo. How much longer can you play this game? You're on the 18th hole already.
Kaufman rubbed his brow. What are you going to do? Goldstein was family. As much family as any blood relation. More even.
So, what do you got for me?
Goldstein proudly opened the yearbook and held it out like a scripture reading.
Class of 21.
He darted his nose at a comely class freshman.
Gloria Daniels.
The smile hadn't tightened yet, but there was no mistaking Bradley Glenn's mom.
Fetching, huh? But here's the cherry on top.
He flipped ahead to the graduating class, took a bony finger and diddled it over a senior portrait. Peter Glenn. It wasn't quite so easy to recognize. Then Goldstein walked two fingers over to the bottom of the following page, and there was Clayton Walsh. Goldstein's find matched up nicely with Kaufman's. Charlene had come across a listing for Gloria's marriage to Peter Glenn on March 6, 1921. Bradley's birth announcement was August 2nd. Kaufman hadn't been one to excel in math. It was pretty much on par with his Hebrew, but any schlemiel could have figured this one out. They walked along Thames, and Kaufman filled Goldstein in. The camp, the tunnel, the Rebbe. Goldstein pulled out his toothpicks and ended up spilling the entire pack. He shook his head and cleared his throat.
Listen, Mo, I really should get on back to Charlene.
Should have kept this crap to myself,
Kaufman said wearily.
Well, you gotta tell somebody.
Goldstein placed a hand on Kaufman's shoulder.
What, you gonna go to a priest?
Kaufman nodded his head and smiled.
See you later at Charlene's, if you don't mind.
She sure as hell don't mind. I guess you can flop on the couch. Come by after 9, we're seeing a flick. Bogey and Alexis Smith, the one where he kills his wife.
You always gotta spoil the ending, don't you?
Welcome back, Mr. Kaufman.
You are uncannily observant, sir.
Peter Glenn raised his ravaged face to the ceiling, seemed to be sniffing Kaufman's scent.
Nah, Newport's a small town, he said coolly. Guys like you just stick out.
Guess so, but small towns breed rumor. Always hated that. Everybody in everybody's business.
The face tilted 45 degrees.
And whose business are you involved with, Mr. Kaufman?
Yours, it seems. And your boy's.
Kaufman scanned the post office, quiet for the end of the day.
You know, Mr. Glenn, he wasn't the one who started the fire at the jewelry store.
The eyes blinked.
I know that.
You do?
And blinked again.
It was the Reed boy.
So you knew all about it, and you didn't do anything?
The fissures around his mouth deepened.
I did do something. We all did. All the parents. We sent our sons off to war.
For a crime only Reed committed?
Glenn didn't flinch.
What crime? Police said it was an accident.
An accident?
Kaufman stiffened.
Just like Patrick Walsh's death?
Whatever is easiest to believe. Reed got his, didn't he? And Bradley'd already enlisted. It was Clayton that handled the details, setting him and Patrick up in the same unit.
How do you read a molten mask? Kaufman didn't want to put the lean on another survivor. It wasn't right.
Clayton handled the details, he repeated. This town gets smaller all the time.
The empty eyes grew wide.
That's why it's best you leave.
Chapter 71. Some secret council must have given him foresight to stuff the cigar box under a bush. Kaufman stood before the portals unarmed, stood straight, his feet on the slate, fedora aligned with heaven. Harlow greeted him without a word, then closed the door in his face. 10 minutes later, Mara appeared, dolled up in a floral-pleated skirt.
All right. What do you have?
She demanded.
First, I need to talk to the soldier.
She stepped forward and skimmed a slender hand across his chest.
He won't speak with you.
Caressed the silk tie.
But I will.
Kaufman was not amused or aroused.
I know your game, kid. Your form is perfect, all the way up to the T. But then, you got no follow-through.
He snapped the tie away and tucked it back in his jacket.
Just tell Bradley I got a message for him. From Ikok Levitsky.
She gave a Shirley Temple pout and spun on her heel. This time, he only waited 3 minutes.
You bastard, Glenn cursed. Funny you should choose that word. I'd warn you not to get your nose out of joint, but I see it's a little late for that.
Kaufman ran a finger along the bridge of his own nose. Glenn sported a small mount right above the cartilage, a memento from their last conversation. He cocked his fist, but before he could connect, Kaufman had him by the arm, dipped down and threw all 180 pounds over his shoulder. Mara didn't do anything, just watched. Kaufman sat on the top step.
"I'm not here to make war, Bradley."
Glenn sneered.
"What could you know about war? You weren't there. You can't know a thing."
"You're right. I don't know about war. But I do know about your ma and Clayton Walsh."
Bradley was up again and swinging. Half Kaufman's age and straight off the Army's assembly line, he still couldn't lay a hand on him. In a few moments, the vet was back on his butt.
"That was a cheap shot, Bradley. I apologize. You just seemed to bring out the worst in me."
Kaufman seated himself again on the step.
"But help me out here. This wasn't too hard a call, being that Peter Glenn married your mom while you weren't much more than a notion, maybe an ill-conceived notion. But the way I see it, Clayton stood a chance to lose two boys overseas, and that just doesn't make sense."
Glenn got up and brushed off his trousers, tugged the cuffs of his Oxford down a half inch below his cream-colored cardigan, shot a menacing look at Kaufman.
"That's because you're senseless, Kaufman. You don't know shit about anything. I am Peter Glenn's son, and whatever he felt about me or my mother when I was born, I swear to God, he loves us now."
Glenn's voice cracked along with his bravado. He rubbed his eyes, then dropped his arms to his sides, opened and closed his hands into fists. Mara got up and approached him. He brushed her aside.
"It's all your fault,"
he cursed, and stormed off around the side of the house. She watched Bradley go.
"Now he'll never tell you about Germany."
"I got what I needed from Levitsky."
Kaufman settled his elbow on his knee.
"Figured if your dad had fathered this one, it might have given him motive."
She shivered.
"That Walsh would have killed Patrick because he had another son?"
"Yeah, a son he actually cared about."
"Well, that's novel, Mr. Kaufman, but I'm afraid you're off. Fact is, Bradley's own father was, at best, neglectful. I don't think they hardly even spoke, at least not until he got older. Bradley said it was beginning to change, but then came the..."
She stopped, but Kaufman already knew what she was going to say. He said it for her.
"Then came the fire."
She nodded.
"So, Peter Glenn gets his sweetheart pregnant. Of course, he does the right thing, but it has to irk him. Takes a job with the fire department. Keeps him busy and out of the house. Eventually, he acquiesces. Possibly even begins to enjoy daddyhood. Certainly begins to enjoy his wife."
Kaufman rested his chin in his hand.
"That explains the lull and the slew of siblings that followed. And if father and son had made amends, it would have been all the more devastating when Kaufman Jewelers went up in flames, along with two Kaufmans, and at least a third of Papa Glenn. All because of a little patriotic fun and games. No wonder Bradley left home. I should have sunk that hole with my eyes closed."
He angled his hat off his forehead.
"Sorry, kid. Pieces seem to fit. Guess I made a hell of a wrong turn this time."
"Not completely. You almost had it right."
She sat down beside him.
"You see, I'm the one who's the bastard."
"Well, doesn't that make everything Jim Dandy?"
he said.
"My mother had a fling, a foreign violinist in town for the music festival."
She creased the pleats in her skirt with the palms of her hands.
"I never met him. Mother couldn't even remember his name."
"So that's why you can keep footing my bill. A hefty inheritance. And why your dad..."
"He's not my dad. Don't you listen?"
Her eyes flashed.
"Sorry,"
he said.
"I was just figuring that Clayton must be pretty desperate to make good with whatever green he's got. Like investing in nuclear weapons, for instance."
"Nuclear weapons?"
"Please, don't get all innocent on me now. The closet routine was a gem. You've known all along, just needed me to know."
He removed his hat and dangled it off his knee.
So, we're back with sticking it to Clayton, then.
Horizon House belongs to me,
she answered flatly.
And discrediting Patrick's status would gum up the works for the man.
She leaned back, hooked her arms around her knees.
Whether Patrick was murdered or not.
She rocked slightly, looked at Kaufman from the corner of her eye.
Well, was he?
He asked. She stood, swayed side to side, letting her skirt unfurl.
You probably know more than me, Mr. Detective. If he wasn't murdered, don't you think he should have been?
Let's find your boy Bradley,
he said as he slid his hat back into place. Mara led Kaufman around the house to the gardens. Twilight was encroaching, wisps of mist creeping over the lawn. At the far end, leaning over the stone embankment, was Bradley Glenn.
Sorry about the slurs. I'm adult sometimes.
Kaufman rested against the wall, looked down the cliff to the tumbling waves.
You're adult all the time, griped Glenn.
That may be. Seems to go with the job.
Kaufman turned to take in the young man. He looked like he belonged here, the landed gentry. A dash of humor would have helped, though. Too bad.
Let's talk about what happened at the camp, Bradley.
Glenn pressed his fingers into the stone.
I know what happened, and I don't need to talk about it.
All right, but your gal doesn't know.
She's not my gal. Glenn snapped his eyes onto Mara.
Right, well, whatever she is, then.
Kaufman scratched the back of his neck.
You want to keep it on the hush? Far be it from me to be the spoiler.
There's no sex, damn it.
Mara shrunk away. Glenn reached out to comfort her. Reminded Kaufman of another delicate relationship, Samuel's and Ulrika. He flipped back to Mara's tale at the country club.
Mara,
he addressed her quietly.
The Patriots, Patrick and his gang. It wasn't some teenage friend of yours they went after. It was you. It was you, wasn't it?
Glenn cushioned her.
You don't need to answer him.
He placed her head against his inflated breast, glared at Kaufman.
You are going too far, mister. Way too far.
But Mara seemed relieved.
Leave it to you, Mr. Kaufman.
She pushed herself away from Glenn, wiped a tear from her rounded cheek.
And if Patrick pawed his own half-sister, and if his buddies held her down on the freshly manicured grass, and if her stepfather laughed and cheered and raised a toast.
She lifted her hand. It seemed to rise like a marionette's on a string. A wooden hand, limp and lifeless.
It was one of those ugly, drunken sprees, Glenn confessed. There were more and more of them. One of the reasons I stuck around was just to minimize the damage.
And you did.
Mara curled back into him. He gently rubbed her shoulder.
But there were times when you couldn't.
Kaufman watched the two innocents, safe in their sexless embrace.
Like at the jewelry shop. Like at Dora Middlebow.
Glenn exhaled. He seemed to melt.
I tried, he said. I tried.
You gotta believe me, I did everything I could. It was as if he were the accused, as if he were the one who'd sinned. Kaufman felt sorry for both of them.
You don't need me to tell you what your schmuck of a sibling did over there, kiddo. Glenn'll fill you in. God knows he's ready to. Right, pal?
Kaufman pinched the brim of his hat, tilted it in salute.
We gotta tell somebody.
Chapter 72. You could say the girl had more motive now than ever. You could say the same for Bradley Glenn. But Kaufman was willing to bet even money it wasn't either of them. Besides, all he really wanted was to see Walsh in ruins. probably as much as Mara did. Fine, then. He had what he needed to start a simple chain reaction, and once the foundation began to crumble around Horizon House, it wouldn't be too hard to uncover an assassin. That'd be a bonus. He opened the cigar box and examined the Luger in the moonlight. It glowed like a jazz singer in a pin spot. 7:43. He shook his wrist and gave the watch an extra whir. Goldstein and his date wouldn't be home for another hour or so. Kaufman hiked down to the boardwalk at Easton's Beach. The new merry-go-round was up and running, the calliope piping out a tinny, "Hello, my baby." Young men and women straddled the ornate horses, circling ecstatically, nothing better on their minds than having a good time. Kaufman tried to imagine Mara and Bradley taking that ride, but couldn't. He got a couple of dogs at an arcade stand. Summertime, and the living is easy. When he got to Charlene's place, the first thing he noticed, centered in her front window, was a sharp, jagged hole. She and Goldstein sat on the sofa, staring at the shards on the oval carpet. The rock was on an end table, the crumpled note clasped in Goldstein's fist. The front door had been left open. Kaufman stood, trapped on the threshold.
"Says loved ones die. That's all. That's all it says."
Goldstein dropped the note and placed his hand on Charlene's knee. She didn't look up.
"I told her all about the case, Mull. Who you really is. Everything. Had to."
"Course you did, Goldie."
Kaufman remained in the entry.
"She was sorry you ain't from the Look magazine." "You take advantage of people, Mr. Koffler."
Charlene spit the words at him. Then she got up, grabbed a dustpan, and began to collect the shattered glass.
"It's Kaufman, Charlene, but it's still Moe, and I'm sorry. Sorry to drag you and Goldie into this mess."
"Hey, you didn't drag me nowhere. I enlisted."
Goldstein began to help her with the debris.
"Kitten, if you're angry with anybody, it might as well be with me." "I am angry with you, you moron!"
She threw the dustpan to the floor, splinters flying.
"You're both a couple of lousy bindle punks," she cried. "And you ought to know better."
She kicked Goldstein in the side, stormed off, and locked herself in the bedroom. The two men surveyed the damage, and each other. Then Kaufman stepped inside and began to help pick up the pieces. They both slept in the living room that night. Goldstein got the couch. Kaufman made do with the rug and a ratty quilt. His phantom had had it easy this time. No need to pay a courier to stab a note to the door. No awkward flights of stairs. No obstruction by large black men. If he'd meant to do anything more than send a shiver up Kaufman's spine, it would have been a petrol bomb heaved through the windowpane. But that would have been small comfort to Charlene, so neither man even tried. The floor didn't make for the best night's sleep. Rancid dreams didn't help either. Kaufman only remembered a scrap, cutting paper dolls out of newsprint. Except he kept nicking his fingers, bleeding all over the paper. Then he wasn't even holding the scissors. They were snapping open and closed on their own, coming after him. He tried to get away and had to climb a ladder. It began to spiral, coiling in on itself. He was left in the dark, but then found he had a flashlight. The beam slit through the blackness. Whatever he saw jolted him awake. It was before sunrise, and Kaufman made himself at home in the kitchen. Cup of tea and a bowl of Cheerios. Goldstein eventually joined him, and they made plans, keeping the conversation hushed to avoid rousing Charlene. For safety's sake, Goldstein would move back into the Y. Kaufman would do the same, long as he needed to remain in Newport. He hoped that wouldn't be for long.
Loved ones die, Goldie.
Kaufman poured himself another bowl and heaped on a mound of sugar.
He threatened Eli and the whole family. Didn't even bother with a teaser before igniting Allegra's place.
But he let you get away.
Goldstein slathered a piece of toast with grape jam.
He's just toying with you.
Fire's a dangerous toy.
Didn't say he weren't dangerous.
Goldstein smiled, a smear of purple goop across his lips.
You said there's high stakes at Oka Point.
Not so sure about that, Goldie. This guy might be on his own. And for some reason, he wants payback. He wants me to be afraid. Afraid for Eli's brood. For Allegra. You.
Kaufman leaned back in his chair. Watched two squirrels clamber up a tree outside the kitchen window, twisting noisily around the trunk.
Loved ones die, Goldie. Loved ones die.
July 4th, they were lucky to even find a room at the Y. It was a share, third-floor walk-up, but with a pleasant enough view of Washington Square. Goldstein signed in as George Elliot, kept him giggling all the way to the room.
Goldie, I need to proceed solo, but what do you say about keeping watch on Eli and the kids? Allegra's safe in Chicago. Can't imagine he'd trouble Charlene with you out of the picture.
And who's going to watch out for me?
Goldstein had his feet propped up on the windowsill, lounging upside down on the bed.
Need me to hire a sitter?
Goldstein hoisted his legs up over himself, rolled backwards, and leapt up on the bed. He bounced in the air, striking a maniacal pose.
You ain't the only fighter here, Jew boy. Come on, show me some muscle.
Kaufman raised his arms in surrender.
Enough. You're acting like my kid nephew.
He yanked Goldstein's leg out from under, flopping him to the mattress. Goldstein sighed.
You've been through a lot, Mo. You always been through a lot, long as I known you. But you was always you.
He got up, went to the window.
Now I ain't so sure. Kinda miss the old guy.
Kaufman bent over and strapped the Luger to his ankle.
Yeah, Goldie. I kinda miss him, too.
Just because we're back in Newport doesn't mean it's going to be easy street for Moses Kaufman. But you knew that. Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening to Sunday Night Noir. So that's it for episode 12, chapters 69 to 72, part 3 of Kaufman's Holiday, A Beacon of Light. Only 3 more episodes left to go. Think you can hold out? Radio Free Brooklyn hosts this show and a whole bunch of other swell programs. Show them you care. Yeah, that's right. Go to radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge. There's even some perks in it for you. You can also sponsor a program, like Kaufman's Holiday, for instance. That would show me you care. As always, special thanks to Chris Durian for our theme song. Case Closed, featuring Brian Schwartz on trumpet and Sang-hee Cho on piano. It's playing right now. And to my dear friend Arthur Rosen for those inspired piano solos that float in and out. This is Matt Mittler signing off. But I'll be back. You'll hear me coming. My floor chimes clacking on the cobblestones.